Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hi folks, I'm Jelaine Fenner, and welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today with my co-host,
Tom Majeure.
Which means we're both co-hosts.
That's right.
Yes.
That's two.
That's right. At least two, and sometimes we have three.
That's right.
Anyways, we're talking about, it's the beginning of January, new beginnings, and most people especially think about, well, I got to go on a diet or I need to exercise more. In fact, I think exercising more was the number one New Year's resolution.
That's correct.
So today, that's what we're going to be talking about is exercise, because this acronym we've talked about the last couple weeks with our folks is New Start.
That's right.
And new was...
That starts with nutrition. It's just one way to remember it. It's not that any one of them are more important than the others, but it gives you a way to remember that. It helps us. It's N for nutrition, E for exercise, what we're doing today, W for water. We've already recorded that session. People have something to look for. Charles Cleveland, one of the experts in the field. You'll love that broadcast. Sunshine, temperance, air, rest, and trust in God. And then we have some bonus ones. We call them the doctors that make house calls. And this is about relationships. So it's going to be an exciting bonus session.
Okay. And so our expert that's with us today is Pastor Robert Benson. We call him Bob.
Thank you.
And he happens to be the chairman of the Strong Tower Radio Board of Directors. He is, even though he's a pastor, he's a registered physical therapist, and you have a degree in?
I have a master's degree in physical education as well.
Okay.
So Pastor Bob is really big into exercise, both physical and spiritual exercise.
Amen.
That's right.
So we're going to learn about, we all know exercise is good, but we're going to learn some reasons why it's so good. Well, Tom, why don't you have a word of prayer for us?
I will. Our great Heavenly Father, what a blessing to come to you. We know that we've made mistakes, but there's new beginnings. And Lord, we're looking at those new beginnings. You care about our physical and our spiritual health. And so we're looking at having optimum physical health and what we can do with your help. Thank you that Pastor Bob's with us today, and we're looking forward to a new us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Okay, so, well, Bob, especially now, I mean, I guess I didn't realize you had a, you know, this education degree in physical education, right?
Yep.
Okay.
He loves to get out with the children at the church school and doing exercise and running. We're going to talk more about that as we go through this program. Right. I can see in our notes.
Awesome.
So why is exercise important?
Well, it's something that God gave to us right from the very, very beginning. Back in the Garden of Eden, he had Adam and Eve training the vines and taking care of the garden. So that's the first form of exercise known to man. After sin came in, man was to till the ground with the sweat of his brow. More exercise.
That's right.
Nation of Israel, when he set them free from Egypt and from slavery, they walked across the wilderness. There was no public transportation systems at that time.
Well, yeah, they didn't ride the donkeys or camels back then. They walked, and the Bible tells us that.
Yep, and Jesus also walked, you know, lots of exercise. So they're right from the beginning, all the way through, before sin and during sin, even afterwards, we're still going to be getting out and getting exercise.
So we were created to be physical.
We definitely were. We were created to be moving.
Moving.
Yes.
Let me share with you an experience that I observed. There was a lady, older lady, advanced in years, and we would visit her sometimes in the winter. And she was a great gardener. And that's kind of a setup. She was a great gardener. In the summer, she was in such poor health, it seemed like she wasn't going to make it through the winter.
Wow.
The summer would come. She would go out in her garden. You would meet with her. We'd go over to her house in maybe August or September. It was a totally transformed lady.
Mm.
And what I attribute to that to is the exercise in the garden.
Yep.
Gardening is the ultimate exercise. Mm-hmm. In fact, our next program is the gardening guide.
So stay tuned. Don't stop listening to this program.
This is an integrated program this week.
So you brought up in the Bible, you know, what God said about exercise. But what about some science? Because science backs this up.
Well, there are lots of things. We'll talk about some of our advantages of exercise, and we'll hit some of the science as we do that. One of the advantages of exercise, it helps you to balance your budgets.
What budget?
What budget are you talking about?
You're talking dollars and cents? No, we're talking about calories.
Okay.
You know, amount of calories we take in versus the amount of calories we expend. So exercise is on the expending side. In North America, we have a tendency to collect a few too many and expend a few too few. So with our Apple Watches, our pedometers, and our Fitbits, it helps us to actually log the amount of exercise that we and the calories that we burn. So that's one advantage for exercise. But there are so many others. It helps to build your reserves. So when you go out and you do, let's say you go walking half an hour every day, your body replaces the energy you spent plus a little bit more. So that the next time you walk, you're not quite as tired and you have more energy reserves. It actually builds your reserves so you never get as fatigued again for the same amount of work that you do.
Is this different than fat reserves?
Fat reserves, yeah, stores energy for potential use down the road. But this is more like storing more muscle glycogen so you can do more physical exercise have a greater capacity before you hit the anaerobic threshold and fatigue and so forth.
So this is a usable form of energy.
Yes, yes.
You know, and I just recently was with my brother, and he was showing me on his phone how he had some kind of an app. And he carried it always on him, so he knows how many steps he did, how many miles he walked. And, I mean, I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. But, of course, why not? You know, you talked about the Apple Watches and the Fitbits. Yep. But why not have something on your phone? But you need to have it on you. So my husband decided he had it on his phone. He was going to start keeping track because he's in and out of the tractors. He's up and down. He's wondering about him riding in the tractor, though, bouncing. Is that going to be steps, too? So he's going to test that app.
That will be interesting. They also have apps where you can also log in your caloric intake. Mm-hmm. So in the morning, I can actually punch in the foods that I did. It kicks in the value, and then it shows me how much my intake was and how much I expended, and if I'm in the net positive or net negative. Ah. So it's like, I ate too much yesterday, so today I'm a little bit less. It can help you kind of modulate your eating pattern as well as exercise pattern.
Well, good idea.
You know, and it's important to have these extra devices, the Fitbits and such. I happen to have one, and at the end of the day or look at a week's time, I find out what I thought I did and what I really did are not always the same thing.
That's right, yeah.
And then when I actually look at it and think back, I say, well, I did more that day, and another day I did less. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard, especially being a woman, regarding our bones, because women tend to have osteoporosis,
yes.
Is that how you say that? Okay.
Yes.
They say it's very essential that you exercise because that's good for your bones, right?
It is. The more those muscles and ligaments they pull on a bone, the more you absorb calcium as you eat, and it deposits the calcium to make stronger bone. So, yes, it is very important to do like weightlifting or some form of exercise to retain the calcium in your bone to keep it strong.
Okay. So walking's the best, though.
Walking is really good. But girls, you know, their upper bodies, sometimes it's good to get something to push up overhead or something like that to keep their arms stronger as well, their bones and their arms and so forth.
Then the other thing I've heard is that you're stressed, you're getting depressed, and anything can make people stressed or depressed.
That's right.
It's always good to maybe go get a 10-minute walk.
That's right.
And we're not talking just a nice little leisurely walk, right? A little more brisk?
Yeah, a little more brisk. It's nice if you can have a little bit of perspiration. You know that you've worked your system a little bit. But exercise is a great mood elevator. You know, we think about all the people taking antidepressants, some people medicating their pain in life with addictive substances, tobacco, chewing. Vaping is a biggie right now. Marijuana has been newly legalized. But you really don't need those things to get the benefit of feeling better. So exercise is a great mood elevator, definitely.
It's a safe one. It's the optimum mood elevator.
That is right.
Well, and especially if you're outside and you're going for a walk, you're in nature. I mean, I think you've heard me. I know they hear me here at the office, and I think I've had it on. You guys have probably heard us on the air. I love blue sky and sunshine and warm weather. But that blue sky and sunshine, I mean, blue is very important for God. I mean, if you do I did a study one time on the Bible about God and the color blue. You think about nature. Well, it's God's second Bible.
It is, most certainly.
You know, so so it's good for you spiritually to be outside, like you said, Tom, about the gardening.
Mm-hmm.
you know, we're outside, mm-hmm. but even just going for walks. Mm-hmm.
It is true. You know, honestly, there, when you get out there in the green zones, mm-hmm. you know, your blood pressure automatically, they've measured it, reduces and stuff like that. But looking around the things that God created, it's not the rat race of life that we have inside a city population, for example. So getting out in the green zones, fresh air, sunshine, a little bit of exercise really builds you up physically, but it also gives you time to contemplate about God, mm-hmm. you know, and think about the goodness of God. If you're doing things like triathlons or long runs or distances like that, a lot of times you want to think of something besides the burning muscles that you're feeling. So you start memorizing scripture and you can play it back and meditate. What does that mean, you know? So I found myself doing that, or singing little songs in your mind that keep you connected with God as you're exercising. And it's just an enhancement spiritually as well as physically. It's a win-win.
I know, you know, we live up here up north in the Cadillac, Michigan area. And every now and then we have to go down to Detroit, maybe catch a plane. But Brian made an observation one time. We're on the highway into the, you know, greater Detroit area. Mm-hmm. And he's driving and he's looking around. And he finally said, "No wonder people don't even think about God. Where's the green?
That's right.
Where's the grass? Where's the trees?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "I am so glad we live up north."
Yeah, it's a blessing to be up here for sure. Yes.
At one point here is it said that your cardiovascular system, your respiratory system, your muscular system becomes more efficient mm-hmm. with exercise. I find that to be surprising. Mm-hmm. It's like I thought you're kind of at a given level, but mm-hmm. you're saying you actually become more efficient?
Absolutely. It's like anytime you do weightlifting, as you do the weightlifting, your muscles become stronger so they can lift more. And when you do this increased exercises aerobically, it actually hypertrophies your heart muscle. So now it's stronger. So every time it squeezes, it actually squeezes out more blood. We call it stroke volume. So now it needs to beat less times per minute, thousands and millions of times less per year, actually adding years to your life potentially. It just, everything becomes more efficient.
You know, it's kind of funny. I always think about that. Man, you're working the heart, so it's beating. So, you know, am I going to take, you know, time off my life? But what you just said, it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. Well, some people might think. I don't know.
So the extra beats that you take now, actually, you need less beats overall throughout the rest of the day and the rest of your life if you're consistent.
So your resting heart rate might be 45, you know, whereas a normal person might be around 50, 55. It's usually 220 minus the age, give or take, is where you're going to hit your resting heart rate. But it's just amazing to me because your heart rate is so significantly, it's reduced. Somebody said that for every hour you exercise, then that number of beats for that hour, you're going to be so much more efficient that it's going to add another 2 to 4 hours to your life in longevity.
Mm. Okay, so say that again. For every hour?
For hour that you exercise, you're going to be so much more efficient that you're going to add another 2 to 4 years of longevity to your life.
Oh, my. Wow. Amazing.
And you have those premium athletes, those long marathon runners, their heartbeats are totally different than ours. Mm-hmm. Than the average person. It's slower.
Yeah, some of them are down at like 38 beats per minute. John Walker used to be a great marathoner, and his resting heart rate was 38 beats per minute.
Wow. Okay.
What about our immune system?
That's the wonderful thing about it. As you get up and run, it moves the lymph system. It gets the lymph system going, and you got T killer cells that fight all sorts of free radicals that cause cancer. So it immobilizes them. So by exercising, you are actually fighting off potential cancer from infecting your system. Mm. And it's a fantastic side benefit that a lot of people don't realize.
Okay, I don't like to exercise. I mean, that's what some people, they don't like to exercise, mm. or they try it, they try different ones, because I've always been told, well, you find something you like to do, mm-hmm. and then you're supposed to stick with it. But if you can't find anything you like to do, you kind of then give up.
Mm. That's true. We get kind of stuck in a rut. We think of biking or running and walking and swimming, and we're kind of limited to that, but the world is just full of opportunities to get different forms of exercise. And there has got to be something that you would love to do. It's like gardening. Some people love to garden. Garden is exercise.
Yes.
It really is. So getting out there and exploring, some people are getting in a fat bike tire riding. They can ride even in the snow in the wintertime. Snowshoeing, getting out in nature, going for just a walk in nature, and that's definitely more energy. Cross-country skiing, just that's another way to get out, things like that.
And I can testify, I personally don't like running because my respiratory is such that I get almost exercise-induced asthma. But I can take my kayak out and do an hour of kayaking, get as much exercise and enjoy it as much. Yeah. Same thing with cross-country skiing. Yeah. I don't think about it when the exercise, I enjoy it, but I'd hate running. So you've got to choose that sport that works for you.
Definitely, definitely, yes.
What about deepening friendship through exercise?
You know, when you get out there, it's fun. Like for my wife and I, we usually walk 3 miles a day, give or take. And we talk all the time about life and stuff. And just knowing that we're going to have that time together is like we want to do it the next day, you know. And if we miss it, we know it. It's like we got to get back to it. We want to be able to keep connecting. So making friends, whatever your sport is, find somebody to do it with, share the experience with, and the accountability that goes with that.
And you share about you and your son doing exercises.
Yeah, that's so much fun. My son, Jonathan and I, we got into triathlons. And so we would compete against each other. It was a lot of fun, you know. Also, my son Daniel, he is more into obstacles. So he was more like in a Merrill's Down and Dirty 5K thing. And the last part is where you go under these ropes in the mud bog. So Daniel was kind of chilling with me, and I didn't realize, I thought that, hey, I got a chance at this, and all of a sudden, he was gone. And I had to go through the mud bog too. But doing it together was such a blast. We had a great time. We talk about those memories, and do you remember? Oh, yeah. You know, so it's so much fun. Find somebody to do it with.
It keeps you in the game.
It sure does.
You know, and I find... because I used to go to the gym, and then I always feel so much better when I do. So my problem, and I think there's a lot of people out there listening, maybe, well, then why don't I do it? And so that's just, it's the self-discipline, right?
Yes,
because I do feel better when I just go out for a walk, or if I do go to the gym and lift weights, and when I'm done, I feel great.
Yep. That's true.
You know what, Brenda and I found out? It's not the length that you do it. It's the fact that you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the length tends to follow. Mm-hmm. And if you fall short a day, if you just staying in there and doing it every day, eventually you'll get back on your game. But you got to do it.
Yep. That's right.
Let's talk about cautions and suggestions.
Yeah, we got just a few minutes. So let's.
Got to tell you, being like 55 plus myself, I just. You can't just get out there and go do it. You want to warm up, get your body, you know, just like you don't get a car on a super cold day and turn it on and then start driving hard on it. It's hard on the motor. It tears it down. Same way. So also cool down when you're done. Stretch a little bit. That's important.
What about overdoing it?
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of us guys think that we're never getting older, you know. We do the weekend warrior thing, and we get out there and we push that snow too hard and aggressively, and we suddenly have heart attacks. We just have to pace ourselves. If we're over 40, go see the doctor if you're a male. If you're a woman over 50, if you're going to do moderate or more exercise intensity-wise, see that doctor. Very important.
Then you want to find something you like to do,
and
then do it.
Do it. Stick to it, yes. Find somebody to go with you to do the exercise, and don't make any excuses. No excuses for not doing it.
Okay, so we're running out of time.
Okay.
What other advice do you have?
Well, I guess if you want to live a healthier life, a happier life, a longer life, a higher quality of living, and have opportunities to develop friendships that will deepen and last through the years and grow closer to God, then you want to get involved in an exercise program.
Okay, well, this is leading right into our next program, which
is the Garden Guy and the Ultimate Exercise. That's the exercise I prefer.
Right, but we're in the month of January, so not sure what kind of exercise you're going to be in your garden in January up here in northern Michigan.
I'm going to go cross-country skiing.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, folks, stay tuned, and we will be right back with our Garden Guy. Hi folks, Jelaine Fenner here. Do you want an easy way to support Strong Tower Radio and it won't cost you anything? When you're shopping on Amazon, just go to smile.amazon.com and pick Strong Tower Radio as your charitable organization, and they will donate 0.5% of the eligible purchase to us. That's smile.amazon.com. So you're going to shop anyways? Why not help Strong Tower Radio?
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the second segment of Strong Tower Radio Today. Today's is the monthly feature of Good Growing with the Garden Guy, and we have our expert, Gary Heilig. Welcome back, Gary.
Happy to be here.
Gary is a retired 34 years with the Michigan State Extension Service, but good gardeners never retire. They just do more, right?
We just keep on plowing through.
Yeah, I like that. So it's just been a pleasure. He's got his own YouTube channel, and he's become a real favorite here. Last summer, we went to Lansing, and we had a Sabbath delight, a Sabbath afternoon walk, and Gary provided the nature event. It was appreciated so much. We're going to ask you to do that again next summer, Gary. In fact, we may have you do more than one. So,
oh, I just can't wait.
Well, Jelaine Fenner is normally with us. We do this program together, but she had gallbladder surgery, and she's recovering. But I have an opportunity to introduce a new guest co-host. I've known this person all my life. In fact, no, I've known her all her life. It might be a little on the nepotism scale. Her last name is Majeure, and her first name is Sue. Welcome to our program, Sue Majeure.
Thank you. This is a new adventure.
Now, she has been here before. Gary met her. We had a call-in segment. We tried a little experiment, and we had a good time during that. Also, I call my sister Sue the armchair gardener. What she does is she reads the books, looks at the videos, and looks at the websites, and tells me how to do my garden. So we have quite a team here. So
he couldn't be the midnight gardener without me.
That's right. That's right. She's inspired me. Well, let's jump right into our topic today, Gary. It's what do we have on our list this month?
All kinds of things. We can talk a little bit about fruits and indoor plants. We're getting through with the holidays, and some people may have some plants left over they want to talk about. There are a number of different subjects, so start wherever you want.
Okay, let's start from the top. Last year, I have to say, I didn't get my fruit trees planted, so do I have a second chance?
Yeah, in the spring.
Okay.
I wouldn't recommend it at this point. Now, what you might want to do this time of year is, if you plan on putting some in, this is the time to order them.
Okay, ordering.
And depending on where you order from, you may have to make quite a few decisions. For instance, if you are going to order from a catalog that's designed for homeowners, you'll decide on what variety you want, what pollinator you want. You could decide on the size of the tree. Some companies, like the Stark Company, has their regular fruit trees, and then they have premium trees, which have more developed roots. But if you go to a commercial catalog, for instance, you're going to have to think about things like, what rootstock do I want on my apple tree, which will determine the ultimate size, everything from a tree that will stay within about 10 feet or so up to standard size. Or you might have to decide on how large a tree you want. They call that caliper. So you can get a tree that will be almost an inch in diameter, the trunk, or a 3/8-inch whip, which is just like a stick. Obviously, if you don't want to wait long, you want to get the bigger trees. And there are some things that you have to remember, that when you're ordering from commercial catalogs, for instance, they may have a bundle charge if you break the bundle. Normally,
so
a bundle
quantity.
Yeah, normally a quantity would be like 10 trees. And if you just want one tree, you can buy it, but they'll charge you for breaking the bundle. So depending on what catalog you're looking at, there are a number of things you have to think about.
Is it true that you have to order more than one tree?
Not necessarily. It depends on if you're buying a tree that requires a pollinator. Yes, you do. But even there are ways around that, too, and we'll talk about it in a second. But there are certain trees that are self-fruitful, which means you only need one. For instance, tart cherries, you can plant a single tree. There, most sweet cherries require a pollinator, but there's a whole list on an MSU website that will tell you what sweet cherries you can buy without having to buy a pollinator. Most apples require pollinators, but if you want to grow, just say Golden Delicious, it does not require a pollinator. Most peaches and nectarines do not need pollinators. Actually, I should say all of them don't. Apricots don't, but they usually recommend that you do have cross-pollination in northern areas like where we are.
So how do we avoid having mail order catalog regret? In other words, how do I get the order the tree and then find out it requires a pollinator? How do I do
you, they'll tell you if you're working with a catalog for homeowners, they will tell you this tree needs to be pollinated and here's some suggestions. But also online, you can find pollinator charts. And in a lot of commercial catalogs, they'll have pollinator charts where you look at the variety that you want to grow, and they'll have a whole list of plants that you can order that will cross-pollinate.
So we add that to our vocabulary, pollinator chart.
Yes, sir. There are a lot of things you have to think about if you're going to plant fruit trees.
Okay. When do I order those? Is it too early, too late?
No, it's neither. You can order, say, August of the previous year, but it's still a good time to order them. What companies will do is they'll send out the best material first, and then the later you wait, the smaller the trees and the less selection you will have. So, no, it's not too late at all.
How many should I, as a beginning orchardist, hobby orchardist, order?
Well, that depends on what you plan on doing with the fruit. For instance, if you just want to have a tree for some fresh eating, one or two trees would be fine. But if you want to be able to process fruit, like make your own applesauce or canned peaches or something like that, then it's a matter of how much you would consume from one crop to the next. So there are ways that you can calculate based on how many servings of peaches you're going to eat in a week. You have to take into consideration your family size, and then you can calculate how much you're going to need. But rarely, most families won't need more than one or two trees.
Very good. What about other things that we should be ordering this time of year?
Well, other fruits that you may want to order are strawberries and raspberries and grapes and blueberries. If you want to have the greatest option in terms of cultivars, when you go down to a garden center, they can only carry so many varieties of strawberries or blueberries or whatever the case may be. But when you go to some of these catalogs, you may have a much wider selection. And so when, say, for instance, if I'm going to grow strawberries, I'm going to be interested in getting disease-resistant varieties. I want ones that have high ratings for flavor, productivity. Some people don't care about the size of their strawberries. They're more interested in flavor. So some berries are smaller than others, whereas other people, they like their strawberries as large as a hen's egg so they can impress their neighbor. And all that information will be in those catalogs. You, for instance, with strawberries, you can have the June-bearing strawberries, ever-bearing strawberries, and day-neutral strawberries, which are the day-neutrals and ever-bearers will produce more than one crop. And the day-neutrals will produce about every 6 weeks. And the reason they named them those is because it's based on how light affects their production cycle. So, for instance, a June-bearing strawberry will start producing flower buds for the following season as the days get shorter in the fall. Whereas the day-neutrals, the day length doesn't affect their production of flower buds, and they just keep on producing as long as the temperatures and the sunlight is sufficient for them to do that.
What about, let's go indoors.
Okay.
So we're probably not doing too much outdoor gardening. We're perusing the catalogs, of course.
Unless you have a greenhouse.
Unless we have a greenhouse, and we've got to make sure we leave time for the greenhouse. Gary's been tempting me with this topic even before he sent the list to me. Tell us about indoor plants.
Well, the thing that people start to notice this time of year with their indoor plants is bugs. So, for instance, they may notice the leaves starting to turn yellow and little spider webs on the top of some of their plants, and those are mites. They could be two-spotted mites or European red mites. And if those aren't controlled, they will kill the plants because there's no predators and their numbers just explode. Or if maybe you were growing some herbs outside and you brought them indoors, you may notice aphids all over them now. Same reason. perfect conditions, no predators. Or maybe you bought something and you notice that the floor around it is a little sticky, or some of the leaves of plants adjacent to them are sticky. That's a pretty good indication you have scale on that plant. And or you might be sitting in the living room and you're watching TV at night and you keep pushing these little gnats away from your face all the time. Those are fungus gnats, and they can come from plants that maybe you recently purchased, like your poinsettias or cyclamens or different things like that. So these are all things that need to be dealt with. And if you had plants from outside and you brought them in, you might have ants. You may have
spiders.
Spiders. There are a number of things that will get started in the house, and some of them will survive in the house.
Now that you painted a pretty bleak picture, help us out, Gary.
Throw everything out.
Oh, I don't think that's the answer.
No. Actually, many of these things can be handled without too much trouble. With scale and aphids and mites, if you don't want to use chemicals, you can use insecticidal soaps or horticultural oils. But I would go with the insecticidal soaps because oils can stain things like carpets. And basically, you cover them really well and it smothers them. It may require multiple treatments to get them under control, but it can be done.
With a spray applicator? Or?
Yeah, just a little hand sprayer, like what you use for Windex or something.
And where do I pick up this insecticide soap?
You can buy them at better garden centers or just jump on Amazon. Okay. I mean, you can find just about anything on Amazon.
What about those leftover poinsettias?
Okay. Well, with the poinsettias, you can keep them. They'll keep those red bracts for months. And what I'm going to do is keep mine, cut them back, put them outside during the summer months and let them grow up. And if you want to, you can subject them to shorter light in the fall. So from, say, 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the evening, 8 o'clock in the morning of the next day, you keep them covered. And then when the bracts start to turn red again, then you can stop covering them every evening and they'll start to produce those red bracts again. But it's some work, and you have to get an early start if you're going to do that.
Are there a number of holiday plants that we get as gifts or we buy for ourselves mm-hmm. that look so great when you bought them, and then the blooms, you know, kind of die back? Is there a way to encourage them to bloom again and look nice?
Well, it depends on what it is. Like cyclamens, for instance, and it's kind of hard to describe these. They have a thick, green, variegated leaf, and they usually are pink or red or white. Their flowers come right up from the middle of the plant. And they prefer cooler weather. So most people keep their houses around the 70s or so. They prefer like 55 to 65. So if you're going to try to keep cyclamens, for instance, you want to put them in the coldest room in the house. And they'll continue to flower as long as they have sufficient light. With poinsettias, the biggest thing is not letting them dry out. Because if they dry out too much, the leaves start to fall off. And then you end up with nothing but red bracts at the top and no leaves along the stems. But you can still keep them until summer and then grow them outside, because they'll grow like gangbusters outdoors. Also, some people will have the amaryllis bulbs, the really huge bulbs that make those big flowers. After those flowers have died down, the bulb needs to rest. So you can take it down to the basement and cut back on the watering, but don't let it completely dry out. And after everything dies down, cut off the material, and then just let it rest down there. When you start to see new growth, then you can bring it back upstairs and start watering and fertilizing again.
Let's turn a corner here and let's talk about my new hobby, greenhouses. Is it right for you? And tips, locations?
Well, the reason why I asked the question, is it right for you? Because that can be a very expensive hobby. What I tell people, first of all, if they're thinking about a greenhouse, think about what do they want to grow and how much money do they have to spend on the project? Because building the greenhouse is only part of it. Keeping it warm is the biggest challenge, especially during these months, January, February, and March. If you're out in the country, you're going to be using propane, which is very expensive compared to natural gas. So you can burn through a lot of propane in a hurry, depending on how you build your greenhouse. There are different coverings that people might use, like plastics, or for instance, I built one that has a double wall polycarbonate, and it's a plastic material. And when you have double walls, you don't lose heat as fast, but it's still a lot faster than a house because you can't insulate it like a house. So say, for instance, when I built my greenhouse, one of the things I did is figured out what the volume was of that greenhouse. And there are booklets that will tell you how many BTUs you need, which is British thermal units of heat that you're going to need in order to maintain a certain temperature in the greenhouse. And based on what kind of heater you have, because they rate them in BTUs, you can figure out how much fuel you're going to need and what it's going to cost you to run that. Now, most people can't do that by themselves because you need a little knowledge of those things. But that's one of the reasons you call the extension people, because they can calculate that for you. And in Michigan, we have specialists that deal with greenhouses, and they can help you with those types of things. But I use my greenhouse primarily for growing things in the spring. I have a greenhouse heater, but I need to get a large propane tank because it runs through propane, and those small containers, they burn out in like a day and a half at $21 per day and a half. So you can figure what that would cost you.
That cuts into your return on investment.
There will be no return on investment with that expense. So
right.
you have to buy the gas in larger volumes in order to make it work.
Now, who are these experts, these greenhouse experts, and what would be a way that we could look those
people? You could just call your local extension office, and each county has a listing with their county government. It would be like Ottawa County MSU Extension or Berrien County or whatever it may be. And you call them and ask them who is the regional greenhouse person, and they can put you in touch with the person.
Fantastic. What about ordering our seeds for outdoor garden?
Well, this is the time to do your ordering. But when the seeds start to come into the greenhouses, which and the garden centers, which is pretty soon now, get them early because usually they have like a 25% discount. They don't normally have those kind of discounts with most of the seed catalogs, but there will be some that they'll give you some deals, like if you order so much, you get so much free, that type of thing. But now's the time to put the orders in. And for some flowers and some vegetables, like, for instance, peppers, they are slow to germinate and they don't grow as fast as a lot of other things. So I usually start those early February, depending on when you can get out into your garden.
Very good. Give us some guidance, the beginner's guide, the dummy's guide for ordering seeds. What should we have in that mix of the first five vegetables or seeds, or the first 10 vegetable seeds we should order?
Well, before I even talk about those types of things, you want to think about, am I a conventional gardener or am I going to be an organic gardener? And there are organic seeds available for people to buy. They will cost a little bit more, but if you're going to be organic, you want to have organic seeds. Secondly, if you are a person that would like a little extra insurance with some of the conventional seeds, you can buy what's called treated seed, which will be seed that'll have a fungicide on it so that in the event that you put it in the ground too soon, it's less likely to rot. Another thing that you can get on your seeds is pelletized seeds. And some of the companies like Burpee or Park will do that. And what they are is seeds that are coated with a material that makes the seeds easier to handle.
Hmm.
And when you're working with very small seeds, that's really helpful, because otherwise you're trying to shake the seeds in there and then they all fall in one spot. And when they're so small, it's hard to move them around. Another thing that you'll want to consider is what type of vegetables do you want? For instance, when you're thinking about green beans or tomatoes, you can have what's called an indeterminate form, which means with green beans, we call them pole beans. And with tomatoes, an indeterminate form means they continue to grow until they're frosted, whereas a determinate type means it grows up to a certain height and terminates its growth. Other things that you might want to consider is the time of the season when things are going to be ready. For instance, there are early varieties, mid-season, and late varieties. So, for instance, if I want to grow watermelon, I'm not going to grow something that's going to be 160 days because we just aren't going to be able to get it in time. So I'm going to look for something with a little bit shorter season, like 80 to 90 days.
Well, Gary, our first segment has rushed past us, so folks, we'll be right back with the Good Growing with the Garden Guy.
Strong Tower Radio publishes a monthly newsletter about the ministry's progress and listeners' response. Get the free subscription just by calling 231-468-2087. Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the third segment of Good Gardening with the Garden Guy with Gary Heilig. Welcome back.
Still here.
Still here. And my guest host, my sister Sue.
Yes, indeedy.
We're going to let her take a pretty good lead, but I get the first question. What you mentioned cyclamen, and that just kind of went right over my head. Can you describe it so that I know what it is? And you said there's some dangers involved in those cyclamens. Mm-hmm.
Well, a cyclamen is a cool season plant, usually sold around the holidays, and it has a thick, leathery leaves, kind of roundish, and up through the middle you'll have a series of flower spikes that the flowers are very different. I can't say it's like any other flower, but they'll come in white, red, and pink, and they come in a clump, and they'll bloom for weeks, sometimes months, if you have the right conditions. But as we were talking during the break, the root section is poisonous, so if you have a dog or a cat that likes to chew on them, you would not want them to get into this because, especially if it's a smaller animal, it could kill them.
So just like I've got a new grandchild, fairly new, to going on 2 years old, we had to child-proof the house. Do you have to child-proof and pet-proof your house when you have guests over?
Well, it depends on the child. When a child is in that stage where they put everything in their mouth, that's around one or two, then you might want to keep the plants out of their reach. There are some plants like Diefenbachia, for instance, if they were chewing on it, it could constrict their throat and it could become a very serious medical issue. Pets are more likely to get into some of these things than children are because most of the time parents are aware of things that kids can get into and they'll be protective. But animals, like if you have a really dumb dog that likes to chew on stuff,
that
can be a problem.
So watch out for that.
But if, say, for instance, if you have an azalea in the house, we normally grow azaleas outside, but there are some azaleas that people will grow, and then they'll have them for holidays like Mother's Day or something like that. And also calancho, which is a common house plant, can cause some problems for animals. Lilies are very poisonous. Some of the forced bulbs like daffodils, they can be poisonous for animals. So you can go online and see complete list of different things that are poisonous to animals, but you really need to be careful.
Would you put in just a simple search of poisonous houseplants?
Yeah, you could do that. And some universities have some very complete lists.
We have wonderful resources. Michigan State is one of those with great websites, great information. And of course, your local extension agent, soil conservation, they're all here to serve you.
Yeah, when we were talking about poisonous plants, when I came in, I was telling you about our dog. We have a small poodle that got into one of the chocolate bars of our grandchildren, and we were up a good portion of the night treating the dog for this poisoning. And luckily, she didn't eat very much, but we gave her some charcoal, and she came through without much trouble. But plants can cause some serious issues, and vet bills are not cheap, so I have to keep an eye on them.
What are some of the, now that you're not outside gardening, you're dreaming over your seed catalogs, and it's fun to do that, mm-hmm. but you can do a little indoor gardening with your houseplants, like propagation or mm-hmm. dividing different things. What are some good, easy plants and projects that you could do?
You can probably propagate just about any houseplant. For instance, my wife has some African violets, and the system that you use for African violets is called leaf petiole, and where you're taking off a leaf, and you want the section that attaches it to the main plant is called the petiole, and you want that section to be about a half inch long. You cut it off with a razor blade or some sharp knife, and use a rooting hormone and put it in a combination of perlite and vermiculite. You can use seed starting mixes, but you're less likely to get rot if you use like a 50-50 mix of vermiculite and perlite. Keep the humidity high by putting it inside a plastic bag or getting a flat with a cover on it, that type of thing. And just one leaf can produce literally 100 plants if you keep it alive. Most people don't need 100 African violets, but there are also things, when we talked about Dieffenbachia, for instance, they're what we call stem sections, where if you have an old Dieffenbachia and you want to reproduce it, you can just cut stem sections, maybe about an inch long or so, put them on the side in your potting media, and you'll see the little plants growing up off the side. And then when they start to produce roots, you just kind of pinch them off and put them in soil. And then there are what we call stem tip sections that can be done with a lot of different plants, like begonias, for instance. And the place where you want to make your cut is just below where leaves are attached. That's called the node. And when you do that, when you dip the tip that you cut in the rooting hormone, it will cause the cells to start to produce a callus tissue, and then those callus tissues will start to produce roots. But when you do that, you want to take the leaves off where you make your slice, just below that node. And those leaf tip sections are usually about 2 to 3 inches long. And again, you want to keep them quite humid. So you either put them in a plastic bag when you put them in the pot, or, like I said, a flat. And what I like to do, if I put them in a flat, I will spray them with a spritz of distilled water to keep them from drying out until they produce roots. Now, some people will just take plants and, like, stem tip cuttings and put them in water. And a lot of things will root that way, but they're not the best quality roots, but you can get it to work on a lot of plants.
Sounds like a good YouTube video.
It's coming.
Okay.
Another inside thing is terrariums. I understand you can make those yourself at home.
Oh, yeah. They're really fun.
And is it true that they can have a closed system where you don't have to water them?
Well, you won't have to water them that often if you have them completely covered. But it's always good to have a small hole so that there can be some gas exchange, because plants use carbon dioxide and they give off oxygen. And if it's completely closed, you'll have a high oxygen environment and not very much carbon dioxide getting in there. And then the plants won't do as well as they would if they had some gas exchange. But if you're going to have a terrarium, you need to select the right plants. Plants that require the same type of water requirements. Some things will like it very dry, like if you're doing a terrarium that has plants that are in dry climates, or you might have something that likes it in more of a boggy type situation, like some of the carnivorous plants, or ferns, or things like that. So you want to get plants that are going to need the same type of care. But once you get them established, and there are companies that specialize in terrarium plants, it can really be nice, and you don't have to do a lot of watering. And unless you develop something like fungus gnats, you don't have a lot of pest problems, and they're really cool to just watch. And every now and then you might run into a tree frog during the summer. You can put them in the terrarium.
How about a flower pot snake?
Yeah, you could put a snake in there if you want.
Now, how for our listeners, how would you describe making just a simple one that they could just do themselves at home?
Maybe even define what a terrarium is.
Well, a terrarium is like an aquarium, because an aquarium has water and fish in it. Only what you're putting in it is plants. And some people will put animals in the terrarium, but not most of the time. We primarily grow it for plants. You might have small ferns, lichens, mosses. And some of the dry climate things might be certain sedums, cacti, things of that sort.
It's kind of a little mini ecosystem.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's actually easier to deal with in an aquarium, because in an aquarium, fish are producing waste all the time, and you have to clean that out. You rarely have to do that with a terrarium. Usually what happens with a terrarium is the plants get too big, or they grow too full, and then you might have to split some things up, but it's very easy to deal with.
You know, when I see a terrarium, I think just a smile comes over my face. I don't know what it is. It just brings plain joy. But back to Sue's question there, how do you start a terrarium, a basic one from scratch?
Well, you can use an ordinary terrarium, or they do have these little glass terrarium. They look like big goblets. depending on what size you want. And some people, for decorative reasons, will put various types of stones on the bottom. And part of the reason for that is for drainage, to drain water away if you don't want a lot of water around your plants. And they'll put levels of, they might put some sand in there. And then they'll put a layer of organic matter, depending on what type of plants you're going to put in there. Then you start putting your plants in, like your ferns or your mosses or lichens or whatever. And what you try to do is arrange it in a way that it looks pleasing. And you need to have what's called an artistic eye for these types of things. My daughter's a natural for that. She can take weeds, for instance, and make them look good in a container. But, for instance, you can put taller plants in the back and kind of have them go down as you will, or you can mix them up. There are different types of ways of organizing them, different texture plants, different color plants. And you just have to work with it. There are books that you can get that'll help you to design the terrarium in terms of the plants that you want to put in there and where to put them and that type of thing.
Is charcoal necessary in your terrarium?
Charcoal can be helpful because it can collect impurities, but it's not necessary. And the thing what you're trying to do is make an ecosystem like you'd find out in nature. And you don't normally see charcoal in nature. So if you are doing things right, you probably don't need it, but it does. It can be helpful, especially if you're producing odors of any kind.
You know, I was just thinking about, would this be something that you parents or grandparents might want to do with their children?
Oh, yeah. I always encourage parents to include their children in gardening projects, because many times kids are disconnected from the world. We're in an electronic age now where everybody's always looking at phones and playing video games. And I found it interesting when they started doing commercials about going out and seeing the forest, because kids just don't do that anymore. When we grew up, we would explore. The greatest thing we would do when we went down to my grandmother's house is we'd say, Grandma, can we go out in the weeds? And in the back of her house were these weeds, but there were caterpillars out there, and there were spiders out there, and there was a little ditch where we would catch pollywogs and crayfish, and there were so many things to see. But when a child is driving along in a car, they miss everything. And I like to tell people, watch along a road when you're driving and see what you see. Then bike along that road, you see a lot more. Then walk along that road, you see everything.
And then get a chair and sit by the road and see what you see.
And then contemplate. And you'd be amazed. There is so much going on that people just don't see.
You know, I found this is out of the season, but sitting on the back porch and sitting still, maybe even reading a book for a period of time, and then in the summer, hear birds sing. It's amazing what comes to you.
Yeah.
Just by sitting there.
I actually used to sit on my back deck, and we had flowers planted around the deck that would attract hummingbirds. And if I was still, they usually come in the morning, and they come in the evening for sure, but sometime they'll come midday. And if you're still, they'll come right near you. And I actually have a picture where a lady would put a sugary material in her hand, and the hummingbirds would actually land in her hand and feed.
Of course, we're kind of talking, if we're going to do that, maybe a little further south this time of year. But back here in the Northland, is there outdoor observations that you can do maybe from your windowsill?
Oh, yeah. Feeding birds is one.
Absolutely.
My daughter, we gave her some birdhouses, and we put them right out front of we have a big bow casement window. And she will put the different types of seeds. Depending on what kind of seeds you put out there is the type of birds that you will attract. And it's really interesting to watch the different birds come in, especially when you have a mixture of seeds. For instance, the blue jays come flying in, and they just throw things all over the place to get at the sunflower seeds. And when they do that, a lot of the seeds of the millet fall to the ground, and the ground feeding birds will come in and get the millet. But you also will see ground squirrels and chipmunks, and it's hilarious when they try to get up on the feeders. And they also knock stuff all over the place. But, I mean, they really appreciate it. But if you're going to feed birds, you should continue the process because they get used to coming to that location for the food and they start to depend on it. And so you should keep it up if you're going to do it during the cold winter months.
What's your thoughts about suet feeders?
Well, again, they'll attract different types of birds. I have no problem with suet feeders. I like to put out citrus in the spring because that will attract the Baltimore Orioles, which I hardly ever see. And I also like, well, we have blueberries for ourselves, but bluebirds absolutely love the blueberries. And if you have space in your yard, especially if you have grassy, weedy areas, you can put up bird houses. And you usually put up two birdhouses facing opposite directions in the field, and you can get eastern bluebirds in there. Sometimes other birds will get there first, but eastern bluebirds are really cool to see, too.
Absolutely.
You can offer them mealworms, too, can't you, because they won't come to your feeders?
Yeah, you have to buy those, but you probably could get mealworms to reproduce. All you have to do is get the meal. And
very good. Any last thoughts for the month of January, Gary?
Well, one of the things that we didn't talk about when we were ordering seeds was heirlooms versus hybrids. And hybrids are specific crosses for various reasons. It might be productivity, disease resistance, or something like that. And an heirloom is a seed that's been around usually about 50 years or more. They're usually open pollinated, which means that you can collect the seed because they're true to, they'll come true to their seed, even though they're cross-pollinated with other plants. And the heirlooms are usually organic seeds, and some of them are really good varieties in terms of flavor. Some don't last as long, and they may be more susceptible to disease, but they are definitely worth it. And there are always new varieties that are released, like the All-America selections. I like to talk about those.
Please do.
And there are a number of them this year. There's a coleus that comes out, but it's called Main Street Beale Street, and it's kind of a purple. But the thing that's really special about this one is that it's very slow to produce the flower spike. So if you like just the foliage, it stays there for a long time. The one thing about this one, you can't buy the seed. They're only going to sell it as plants, and I don't know why that's going to be the case.
But Tom would buy it because Tom loves coleus.
That's right. That's right.
Also, there are a couple of vegetables. There's a pumpkin called Blue Prince, and there's a tomato called Early Resilience, and another tomato called Apple Yellow that are out. And you can go to the All America Selection website, and it will tell you all the reasons why they were selected as award winners. And what I will be doing is growing some of these this year, and I'll probably do a little review on them at the end of the next season to let you know. There's also a Rebecca called American Gold Rush. That's a new variety that you might want to try. And there's an Echinacea called Baja Burgundy. Now, these are all the ones that are good for our area. There are national winners, which means they'll grow anywhere in the United States very well. There are what we call the Great Lakes region, where those varieties grow very well here. And there are some other award winners that are growing better in the Southwest or the Northeast. You can try them here, but they may not grow as well as they would in those climates.
Well, we've had another successful Good Growing with the Garden Guy program. Gary, we're looking forward to our program next month in February. We've got some exciting topics that we're looking at, and my sister Sue will join us again for the February meeting. We're going to talk about pruning. It's getting close to that time for February, and other topics. We're going to talk about ferns and saffron. So stay tuned. I'll be looking forward to the February edition of Strong Tower Radio Today. Bye, folks.